very much in favor of the denuke of North Korea. And we're talking about different things. We have some things we're going to be talking again soon.
President Trump and Chinese President Xi talk about what to do about North Korea's nuclear program. It's Thursday, September 7th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Also ahead, Myanmar's leader says fake news is inflaming the Rohingya crisis in her country. A leading leftist journalist is gunned down in India, and will visit a town in the state of Arkansas that is getting new economic life thanks to China. And remember, you're a part of the program. Join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. U.S. President Donald Trump says he is taking a wait-and-see attitude towards North Korea, but added that he will not put up with Pyongyang's continued nuclear expansion. Speaking outside the White House as he prepared to travel to the state of North Dakota, Mr. Trump made the statement after speaking by phone with Chinese President Xi Jinping.
President Xi would like to do something. We'll see whether or not he can do it. But we will not be putting up with what's happening at North Korea. I believe that President Xi agrees with me 100%. He doesn't want to see what's happening there either. We had a very, very frank and very strong phone call. We're going to see what happens. We'll see what happens. Certainly that's not a first choice, but we will see what happens. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Meanwhile, in Vladivostok, Russia, the leaders of Russia and South Korea seemed far apart on the issue of stepping up sanctions against Pyongyang after a meeting on Wednesday. South Korean President Moon Jae-in said that he and Russian President Vladimir Putin agreed that North Korea's nuclear buildup was bad for all parties. He said, President Putin and I also agreed that the missile development pursued by North Korea is a wrong path, and it is an urgent task to ease tension on the Korean Peninsula. The Russian president said that North Korea's nuclear ambitions are a violation of UN resolutions and pose a threat to the entire region. He said, we are not recognizing the nuclear status of North Korea. Pyongyang's nuclear missile program grossly violates the resolution of the UN Security Council, undermines the non-proliferation regime, and poses a security threat in Northeast Asia. However, the Russian president stopped short of agreeing to more sanctions against Pyongyang, something that Mr. Moon was seeking. Mr. Putin said it's impossible to solve the Korean Peninsula's problems by only sanctions and pressure, and that we should not succumb to emotions and drive North Korea into a corner. One should stay calm and more than ever, and avoid steps which may escalate tensions. Meanwhile, in Estonia, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg called on North Korea to abandon its missile and nuclear programs following the country's sixth and largest nuclear test of an advanced hydrogen bomb last Sunday. Speaking in the Estonian city of Tapa, where he was visiting NATO troops, Stoltenberg said the testing of nuclear weapons was a threat to international peace and security, as well as violating UN Security Council resolutions.
We don't recognize the nuclear status of North Korea. The nuclear program of Pyongyang grossly violates the resolution of the Security Council of the UN. It undermines the regime of non-proliferation. Мы не признаем ядерный статус Северной Кореи. Ракетно-ядерная программа Пхеньяна.
South Korea is planning to deploy additional launchers of a U.S.-built missile defense system, a further sign of escalating tensions and a diplomatic stalemate over North Korea's growing nuclear weapons program. The South Korean Defense Ministry announced Wednesday that it would install four more rocket launchers that make up the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System, or THAAD, along with the two launchers already in operation at a former golf course. At the United Nations, meanwhile, the United States circulated a draft of a new UN sanctions resolution about North Korea to Security Council members, pushing to get a vote next Monday. The draft, obtained by VOA, calls for the ban on the sale of oil, as well as refined petroleum products and natural gas liquids to North Korea. Pyongyang imports nearly all of its oil and gas from China, and without it, experts say the economy would quickly be strangled. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. The U.S. is set to send 3,500 additional troops to Afghanistan. A leading activist journalist is shot dead in India. India's high court allows a rape survivor to end a pregnancy. The Vatican declares Mother Teresa a patron saint of Calcutta. And Canada mulls buying used Boeing fighter jets from Australia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our website, voanews.com. Myanmar's de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi says there has been a huge iceberg of misinformation about the violence in her country's Rakhine state that has forced nearly 125,000 minority Rohingya Muslims to flee across the border to Bangladesh. In a statement posted on Facebook Wednesday by her office, the Nobel Peace Laureate said she had spoken with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan about the crisis on Tuesday. The statement said Ms. Suu Kyi discussed a series of photos posted on Twitter by Turkey's deputy prime minister that allegedly showed dead Rohingya that were later proved to be unrelated to the current violence. She told Erdogan that fake information is promoting the interests of terrorists, a word she used to describe a group of Rohingya insurgents who launched a series of attacks on security posts in Rakhine State that triggered the crisis. That message came as Turkey's foreign minister traveled to Bangladesh with a plane load of supplies for Rohingya refugees. A presidential spokesman, Ibrahim Kalin, announced 1,000 tons of aid is being sent to both Bangladesh and to the Rakhine state where the Rohingya Muslims live. Earlier, Myanmar's national security advisor, Tong Tun, echoed Ms. Suu Kyi's statement, criticizing what he called fabricated news.
I'm deeply disappointed and saddened by the disinformation campaign being waged around the world with regard to the situation in Rakhine. We see a deliberate attempt to spread fabricated news on the situation in Rakhine via both the print and broadcast news as well as online social media. These fabricated news items are written and published with the intent to mislead the public. They are patently false and cannot be accepted.
At least 400 people have been killed since a group called the Arkan Rohingya Salvation Army launched a series of attacks on police posts in Rakhine, which is home to most of the Rohingya minority. The police responded with attacks on villages to hunt down the insurgents. The national security advisor, that is, said that his country will do what it has to defend itself, but will not indiscriminately use violence.
We will defend ourselves from acts of terrorism. We will defend our territorial integrity and the sovereignty of our nation. We will protect our citizens. However, we will exercise maximum restraint in the use of force.
In Bangladesh, meanwhile, authorities said at least 5 people drowned when a boat carrying a group of Rohingyas capsized Wednesday morning as it was sailing in the waters that separate the two countries. Sectarian violence between Buddhists and Muslims has flared periodically for more than a decade. Until last month's attacks, the worst violence occurred last October, when insurgents attacked several police posts, sparking a military crackdown that sent thousands fleeing to Bangladesh. The Myanmar government has denied allegations of abuse against the Rohingya and limited access to Rakhine to journalists and other outsiders. But the country's ambassador to the United Nations says the government plans to implement the recommendations from a UN commission to improve conditions and end the violence. Happening now in Asia, India's Prime Minister Modi addressed his country's diaspora in Myanmar, promising to grant gratis visas to all citizens of Myanmar who want to visit India. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Journalists and civil society activists, that is, led protests in major Indian cities on Wednesday to condemn the killing of a prominent Indian journalist, Gauri Lankesh, who was an outspoken critic of Hindu nationalist politics. The 55-year-old Lankesh was shot dead outside her home on Tuesday night in the information technology hub of Bengaluru. Her murder sent shockwaves through the media, with many slamming it as an attempt to silence the voices of dissent. Independent journalist Nirja Chowdhury, based in New Delhi, questioned if Lankesh's killing was an attempt to cow down the media.
Her killing, was it only to settle scores with her, or was it meant to be a message to the entire media that anybody who writes or speaks like she's doing can face a similar fate? So it's of enormous concern.
Lankesh's killing is the latest in several attacks that have targeted secularists and rationalists in recent years. Marchers denounced what they called a rising intolerance and a growing trend toward using violence to settle political or ideological differences. The Editors Guild of India said that her killing is an ominous portent for dissent in democracy and a brutal assault on freedom of the press. A senior leader of the opposition Congress Party, Kapil Sibal, said that he was stunned by her killing.
Sort of, it's mind-boggling that in this country, democratic country, a country with such diversities on the basis of ideology, people are being killed.
Lankesh was the editor of a weekly Kannada language newspaper, Lankesh Patrik. Known for its left-leaning views, her publication was often critical of right-wing Hindu nationalists, including members of the ruling BJP party. She had carried several stories in recent months that were critical of the federal government. And she was convicted last year of defamation of local BJP leaders in her state in a case she said was politically motivated. She was out on bail and had vowed to fight her conviction. Amnesty International said Wednesday that her killing raises alarms about press freedom in India. Karnataka, where Lankesh is based, is ruled by the opposition Congress Party, but is headed for local elections next year. A court has approved a plan for Australia to pay millions of dollars in compensation to former detainees held at an offshore camp for migrants in Papua New Guinea. As Phil Mercer reports, a judge said the former inmates held at a facility in Papua New Guinea should receive damages for illegal detention.
This is the largest human rights deal in Australian legal history. Asylum seekers and refugees who were held at an Australian-run camp on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea between 2012 and 2016 will share a $55 million settlement. The men claimed they suffered physical and psychological harm and that they were falsely imprisoned. The class action suit had alleged more than 1,900 detainees had been kept in inhumane conditions, given substandard medical care and exposed to abuse and violence. The Australian government hasn't admitted any liability, but said it wanted to settle the case to avoid a lengthy and expensive trial. But Rory Walsh from Slater and Gordon, a law firm representing the complainants, is claiming a moral victory over the Australian government, also known as the Commonwealth government.
We said, you've got a duty of care. The Commonwealth did not want that tested in a court of law. The Commonwealth settled this case and paid $70 million not to have that fiction tested in court. We think that fiction is now at an end, and the Commonwealth has a duty to these people and ought discharge that duty by treating them fairly.
The camp in Papua New Guinea is expected to close by the end of next month. Some refugees may be resettled in the United States, but the fate of 800 men still on Manus Island remains unclear. Australia has sponsored two offshore processing camps in the South Pacific, including a facility on the tiny Republic of Nauru, where conditions have also been criticised by rights groups. Canberra has insisted its uncompromising offshore detention policy has deterred asylum seekers from attempting hazardous sea crossings in boats operated by trafficking gangs. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, we'll visit a town in Arkansas that's getting some new economic life from China. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
And I'm David Byrd in Washington. VOA Asia continues now with one of China's biggest textile mills planning its first North American factory in a small town in the southern state of Arkansas. VOA's Ping Zhang went to have a look at local expectations and the promise of new jobs.
Forest City is a small town near the Mississippi River, where the Chinese textile giant Shandong Ruyi is planning a $410 million investment to spin yarn at a factory where local workers once built Japanese televisions. Mayor Larry Bryant says the company is already working on training programs at the local community college.
I think everybody's happy, everybody's waiting. And if they were to tell people tomorrow to come out and fill out an application, they would have thousands tomorrow.
Ruiz's project is going to consume 200,000 bales of Arkansas cotton annually. That's nearly all the cotton the state grows each year. So Arkansas Economic Development Commission Executive Director Mike Preston expects a surge of new planting.
That's going to turn around and put money back into their pockets and the people that they employ, as well as everyone in between, the people who are, baling the cotton to those who are transporting it and bring it to the facility and everyone transporting it out. So the supply chain on a company like this and a project like this are just, they're exponential.
Some Chinese investors in the U.S. are facing challenges from labor unions amid claims of workplace culture clashes. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson has brought nearly $2 billion of Chinese investment to his state. He says there are always culture differences to work through.
And there's things that we can learn from China entrepreneurship and China workers and how they do things. That's a great idea that we ought to adopt here, and vice versa. I think that you'll see that the China business leaders will see some very good practices that we have that they may want to adopt. So I see this as a great win for both sides whenever we have those exchanges.
Delta Q barbecue owner Pierre Evans says the new Chinese bosses will get a warm welcome in Forest City.
It can't do anything but help not only my business, but all the businesses. I mean, that influx of income and influx of money is going to be a big impact to a small community like this.
Local leaders are especially encouraged by the company's promise to create 800 jobs and offer wages more than $15 an hour. That's nearly double the minimum wage in the community, which has been struggling economically for decades. Ping Zhang, VOA News, Forest City, Arkansas.
We have this news alert from VOA Asia. The U.S. military has apologized for anti-Taliban leaflets that contained offensive material. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Peripheral artery disease is a painful condition caused when cholesterol and other fats build up and clog blood flow in the blood vessels. It is associated with obesity, diabetes, and smoking, and can be very painful. As VOA's Kevin Enochs tells us, though, one of the most effective treatments involves getting up and moving.
Walk it off. It's an old saying that parents or football coaches use to keep kids moving in the case of a minor injury. But it turns out it is also effective for adults suffering from a more serious disease called peripheral artery disease, or PAD.
Peripheral artery disease is a blockage of the arteries that supply the legs. And patients who have peripheral artery disease tend to have difficulty walking. They often get pain in their calf muscles, or they can feel tightness or a burning or even weakness.
Peripheral artery disease can be incredibly painful and debilitating.
It hurt from my calf to my hip.
The pain was just excruciating.
In the United States, treating the disease through surgery costs an estimated $4 billion a year. But supervised time on the treadmill, it turns out, can be just as effective.
It's one of the very few therapies that is effective, and suddenly it will increase access of patients to this effective therapy.
For people who are taking advantage of the program, it can be life-changing.
You know, there is life at the end of this. You know, I can get back to the things that I used to do, and I know it's going to be better. But you have to push yourself. You have to want to get better in order to do better.
4 months of the simple program have put Zella Coleman back on her feet. She is now taking walks around her neighborhood without pain. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Rockets that will take Americans back to space from U.S. soil for the first time since the retirement of the space shuttle in 2011 could also launch new careers in space science. Faith Lapidus tells us how.
As Voyager 2 nears the outer edge of our solar system and the Cassini spacecraft begins its final approach into Saturn's atmosphere, workers at the United Launch Alliance Rocket Factory are preparing for the next phase of America's space exploration.
Within this rocket factory, we have about 23, 24 missions in work at any given point in the day.
United Launch Alliance builds Atlas and Delta rockets, which traditionally have carried cargo or robotic science missions.
Over the last 10 years, United Launch Alliance has assembled and launched rockets for more than 115 missions, ranging from the Mars Science Laboratory, which is a Curiosity rover, Juno mission. Now we're getting more into the manned spaceflight side of things and really returning manned spaceflight back to American soil.
That opens the door for young aerospace engineers and scientists to start to develop the hardware and systems to carry astronauts to and from space.
So this is really history in the making. This is really the Apollo era for the next generation. This is inspiring this next generation to fall in love with space again, to really test their boundaries and us paving their way for the future of commercial space exploration.
3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
Several test flights, including a crewed mission, are planned for next year. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And finally, the Vatican has declared Mother Teresa a patron saint of the Archdiocese of Calcutta at a mass in the city where she dedicated her life to the poor and downtrodden. The honor came 16 months after Pope Francis declared Mother Teresa a saint. About 500 people attended the mass on Wednesday at a cathedral where the Vicar General read the decree instituting her as the second patron saint of the Archdiocese. St. Francis Xavier was the first patron saint of Calcutta in 1986. Mother Teresa spent the majority of her life in the Indian city, founding the Missionaries of Charity, an order which serves the poorest of the poor. She died almost 20 years ago, September 5, 1997, at age 87. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. You can let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jim Harmon. We'd also like to give a shout out to the voice of Chang Zheng, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Changzheng Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan, and DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines in Diliman, Quezon City, the Philippines. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.